Accession number 9420, reel 22.
Mr. Bill Gilman, reel 22. How did you manage to organise your life so that none of these varying commitments clashed? I realise your job made it fairly easy for you to do, but surely sometimes you had problems.
Well, I'm one who's, I suppose you can say, well, I don't know whether the word volatile is the right word to use, but adjustable. You know, I can adjust myself to any circumstance. I've always been like that, and so fortunately I had a job where I was my own master, you see, and I could go out when I wanted to, although I kept regular days for going out to see my members. Obviously it was the proper way, you've got to organise things properly. Fortunately, I could condense a lot of my work into a lesser time than a normal work person is if they're working for an employer, because I was employing, I used to call out, for instance, I could make fortnightly calls and get a double week instead of going out once a week.
How did you decide about your priorities? For instance, I'm thinking if your emergency committee and the Home Guard clashed.
Well, these were fixed. Home Guard duties and parades were fixed on certain days. Council emergent committees, of course, they were fixed, definitely.
How often were they? I don't think I asked that. How often did the emergency committee meet?
Usually twice a month, you see, because you didn't meet every week. I mean, it was only if any you had a special meeting called it, and that was normally in the evening, and so that you just simply attended if you received a special summons. Other than that, you could devote in the spare time in between, you fixed your parades in, and especially when I was doing the Home Guard mock battles and all this, and umpiring.
Would you have to do much guard duty with the Home Guard? Would you?
Oh yes, in the early days. That's an interesting question, because when I first joined the Home Guard, I remember my first duty, and this was with the Town Hall unit, because everybody laughed that I was helping to guard council property, which it really wasn't council property, but it was the pumping station down in Stratford Market there at the back of the waterways there. And I remember that in the station there, the northern it was the generating station rather, at West Ham. It was a very, very solid building, but it was considered to be a military risk. And assailable by anybody who wanted to do mischief from a destruction point of view or anything like that. And I know I was doing two on and four off with a rifle over my shoulder, my great coat on, in that winter. I forget which winter it was, but it was bloody cold, I know. And there was me, I was marching up and down outside there, outside my own pumping station.
How often a week would you be on that sort of guard duty?
How often? You'd have so many nights on. They would be allocated, you know, and the duties were divided up between the members in your platoon or your company, and you did so many nights each week.
Was there any clash between your Home Guard duties and your assistant outside controller duties? Because they seem to have taken up a lot of time.
No, because normally, if there was a raid, for instance, then obviously we proceeded. I had the understanding with the Home Guard that I should proceed, leave my platoon or headquarters or whatever I was engaged in, and go to control to find out, to deal with the raid, because they realised that I had these, the priority of that. And so there was no difficulty about that. I used to fit things in. If a raid happened during the day, well, of course, it proceeded in the normal way, but normally they weren't daytime raids at all. They were night raids.
Could you get there on most nights to be on that there were raids then?
Yes, I was quite free. Yes, and I had no difficulties that way. I fitted things in to suit myself. I was my own master, fortunately. I was lucky that way, really. And so were the, it was the council in that respect, because having somebody there... And I, any spare time that I'd got, I stayed at headquarters playing snooker, with sometimes with my fellow councillors who were on the emergency committee.
How about your political life? Did the Labour Party continue to politically organise, or did it stop for the war?
No, that's a good question, because the general orders from the Labour Party headquarters was suspend all party activities, and that went out to everybody. And most of the wards, they didn't want any telling, they packed it, you know. But I was secretary of my ward. It was the best and the biggest and richest ward in the borough, Broadway. And, of course, that's how it was, I suppose, that after the war, I got involved with the general election, which took place afterwards. But I kept my ward going. And we used to have our fortnightly meetings just the same. We used to meet every fortnight at the Workmen's Institute. And fortunately, it happened to coincide with, as a relief, or happened to be a relief to some of the people who wanted something different. And apart from them risking going to the pictures, which some of them did, because the cinemas were still running and a certain amount of entertainment still went on, you couldn't pack everything up. And it was a relief for the ordinary folks to come to a meeting once a fortnight and just sort of keep the sequence going. And we used to keep it going that way. And as I say, we still got the... And sometimes we organise things in spite of the war. You know, things that we used to do. I didn't see why we should pack up and more or less go into solitude in that respect, political-wise. So and it was happy. We went along quite nicely.
What sort of topics would you discuss at the branch meetings?
The general effect of the war and what was going to happen after the war was over, and which, of course, you couldn't tell. You could only make assumptions and all that kind of thing.
Was there any criticism of the way the war was being fought?
No. Nobody could make any... It was such a huge, almost, you might say, ungovernable affair from the ordinary citizen's point of view, which it was. People think that when it's peacetime, you can control things by complaining and demonstrations and protests and appeals to the government, whoever's in power at the time, that you can do that when there's a war on, but you can't, because you're absolutely helpless. You're at the mercy of the enemy more than you are your own people. So you don't quarrel among yourselves. You're more or less, it unites you.
So your meetings supported the government's line and the way the war was being run, you'd say?
Well, we weren't asked one way or the other to support. I mean, nobody thought of... you couldn't condemn anybody because you couldn't put anything in its place. There's no good condemning people for doing this, that, the other if you couldn't give them an alternative. There's no sense in that, is there? So, of course, we didn't discuss the... Or we realised, all of us, that war was wasteful and it was... a useless business, and that we were being attacked by a dictator who had no conscience and was guilty of the concentration camp business that was reported from time to time.
Did you know about the concentration camp?
Oh, yes, that was reported in the... They only had smatterings of it, but they didn't realise. It was... rumours were coming through, and they were being either distorted or accurate reported. We didn't know which until we got the true scene of it after the war and we saw for ourselves what was happening.
Now, You were at one point chair of the emergency committee towards the end of the war, as the war came to an end.
Well, when the war came to an end, the emergency committee was abolished.
What happened to
the... We went back to normal committee meetings then and the normal council procedure.
What had happened to figures like the leader of the council and the mayor and other such people? You seem to have jumped over those, because you weren't mayor at the time, where you became mayor after the war.
Oh, yes, I wasn't mayor until 1953, and this was in 1945.
So why were you... Because you were the effective head of the council as chair of the emergency committee.
Yes, more or less, but I didn't realise it. I mean, you see, I had to work under the control even of a controller. I was only the assistant controller, but I was chairman of the committee which had to carry out the orders which the controller had received from the government. So that was the chain of command. The government, the controller, the emergency committee.
So people like the leader of the Labour group and...
They
had nothing to do with it.
No,
the mayor.
No, there was no group, no meetings like that at all. It didn't work, you see. Things were suspended. That was as simple as that. Couldn't work. You couldn't. No good you trying to work, because you had to do as you were told. You were subject to military and government discipline on a wartime footing.
As the war came to an end, how did that situation change, and how did your relationships with the Tories, the Conservatives, change?
Then we had to turn our attention to an election.
When did you do that? Was that before the actual end of the war?
No. There was talk, you know, generally talk at odd times, just casual conversation about what we were going to do when the war finished and how we were going to deal with it. But we hadn't got a guide as to what we could do because of the state of destruction and the reconstruction that had to be dealt with and gone into, and the financial side. And we felt that Labour would be the answer to it, a socialist government. And, of course, that was the way our thoughts tended, that way, from those of us who were socialists. And the Tories, of course, had their way of dealing with the aftermath of the war. And as you know, we had a sweeping victory and swept Churchill out and Attlee in.
Can you tell, you know, you were appointed an election agent for one of the parliamentary candidates.
Yes, I was an election agent.
What can you remember about that campaign and the main issues and the way you fought for Labour?
Well, at that time we had four divisions, you see, in West Ham. Very shortly afterwards it was changed to North and South West Ham. And in that case, of course, North West Ham was Lewis, South West Ham was Elwin Jones, sir, who later became the Lord Chancellor, as you know. And
you were Lewis's agent, were you?
What's the name's agent in the Stratford division? Well, he only lasted a year anyway, so you know, and so then he retired, and we had another election, and I became Lewis's agent as well.
Well, in the actual 1945 election, what can you remember about the feel of the campaign? Were you certain you'd win as an agent? Because you would.
Oh yes, we had no difficulty about that. West Ham's always been Labour. If you put a sack of potatoes up in West Ham and called it Labour, they'd vote for it. It's not like that now, mind you. Of course, it's New Ham now, and there you get a lot of youngsters coming in who want to run the world, and they haven't got any experience, and the result of it is, as you've seen in the papers now, and can see it, there's criticism all round and fighting one another instead of being together like we do now, like we did then.
But were you aware that you'd win throughout the whole country? Did you expect?
Well, we hoped we would. We weren't too sure about it, mind you, because Churchill, being a great leader, and he was a great leader, he was undoubtedly the one who pulled us round from a moral point of view rallied us together and appealed to us, and it worked too. And so it was successful. I got the Lewis elected, and we went on from there. And he went on for a number of years, as you know, through several elections, even after I left West Ham.
Thank you very much.